Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm Daisy Green from AHDB, and welcome to today's podcast on breeding for productivity in a block system. High quality cattle are key to profitable dairy farming. This requires good quality genetics, as without this, however good your management, there is a ceiling to your herd's productivity and profitability. In order to take control of breeding decisions and maximise the value of your system and your milk contract, the first step is to understand the current status of your herd. This can be achieved by using the AHDB Herd Genetic Report to identify areas of strength and weakness and to set targets for the future. Today I'm speaking to George Brown, a dairy farmer from Hampshire, who in the last 4 years has made significant changes to his herd. Welcome, George, and thank you for speaking to me today.
You're very welcome.
Can you please tell me a bit more about Biston and what's been going on?
So Biston is an estate in Hampshire, a mixed farming estate in Hampshire. And I've been involved here for about 4 years. So we're a mixed arable and dairy enterprise predominantly, with a heavy environmental focus, but my role is only on the dairy, I suppose. It's a contract farming agreement, and today we're milking about 600 split calving cows. It's very much run as two separate herds, effectively milked through one parlour. So we have an autumn calving herd, which calves in August and September. They are effectively just trying to follow a kind of K-Karslaw type self-feed silage model. So self-feeding in the winter on 50-50 maize grass and then grazing in the summer. And then we have a spring calving herd, which I suppose you might say is like a New Zealand type system, which calve in February and March, graze, and then out winter on fodder beet. So it's nothing too revolutionary. I guess we're just trying to follow two quite well-proven models, which are meant to be simple. We make it look hard, but most of the time it's meant to be simple.
What output are you looking at in those two herds, or is it?
Really good question. So we don't often, I guess we've got one bulk milk tank, so we don't really see very clearly the differences between the two herds. But I think, well, today we're sat at 560 kilos of milk solids, about 6,200 litres per cow. If we energy correct it, which we do for some benchmarking we do with Arla, it's sort of just over 7,000 litres of energy corrected milk. But yeah, 550 kilos of milk solids, 560 kilos of milk solids today.
Amazing. And that wasn't always the case here at Biston, was it? So when you started, what did the farm look like?
So the history is a little bit complicated. Once upon a time, the estate had three dairies, and then in 2001 they got bought together, and our existing dairy facility was built. And so that at the time was a 500 cow split calving herd. We ran that system, or the estate ran that system for 10 years, and then there was this move towards sort of spring block calving. So a kind of Holsteiny type herd was taken and crossbred to turn them into a spring calving herd, heading, I guess, on a sort of once a day kind of direction. The spring calving herd was run for about 10 years, and then in 2018, that sort of changed, and there was a bit of a change in policy, and I came along in 2019, and since then we have, I guess, moved back towards a split block calving herd. We set off with 500 spring calving cows. Today we're about 380 autumns and sort of 220 springs. I think the detail of how many cows are in the split doesn't really matter. The plan was to be 400 and 200. I think sort of 380. I don't think it makes any difference. Today it's a split calving herd, and that decision was driven off the fact that it's a very free draining soil type, so we're quite high rainfall. We're about 80 centimetres of rainfall a year. Yeah, monstrous difference. So 80 centimetres of rainfall a year. So reasonable rainfall, but we would be very free draining soil type and really burn up in the summer. So we were keen to move away from this fully spring herd that just took a lot of feeding in that dry weather.
Yeah.
We tried a bit with looking at alternative grass species, but we were probably finding we were still getting into this big feed deficit in the summer and putting in a lot of feed. So the desire was to change the herd calving pattern to reduce the amount of feed it fed in the summer.
Okay, fantastic. And so now that you've got the split block and you've seen that transition and you've rolled cows, and that had the potential to build up some stale genetics and be quite an expensive decision. What, when you were breeding during that time, was your focus? What was your driver when you were picking semen, picking cows?
Good question. There's lots there. So rolling cows is an expensive activity, definitely. There weren't many non-negotiables from the estate and how we were going to run our dairy. One of them, though, was that we had a very high health status, pardon me, and we didn't want to bring in external genetics. We didn't want to change the herd and buy in new cows. So if we wanted to change the calving pattern, the only way to do that was going to be rolling cows. That put a big handbrake on production for 2 years. So we rolled 200 cows 2 years in a row. And everyone will tell you that stale cows are inefficient and unprofitable, and sure, it turns out that is true. So we proved that nicely for anyone who wants to know. And it's only now that we've finished rolling cows that we've sort of started to unlock a bit more of the genetic potential in the herd. In terms of the genetics and the stale genetics, I mean, that is a fair challenge. I suppose we were never going to replace the herd. We were never going to change the herd. So there wasn't really a choice. We deliberately set about to try and roll better, younger cows. So we didn't want to just serve and allow empties to roll. We both years deliberately didn't serve a portion of our best, youngest spring calving cows, so that we knew we were taking some good genetics over to the autumn herd, because the goal was always to breed our replacements from the autumn. So I suppose we try to combat it a bit like that, rather than just mating the good cows to beef in the spring and then ending up with this real tail enders to mate in the autumn to dairy. So we did seek to proactively put good cows across. But yeah, it's a fair challenge that, like, there's a massive cost which we've borne out in rolling cows. But hopefully it's a, you know, once in a career decision. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now, what are your breeding goals? And so how are you setting them, and who's involved in that process?
Good question. So we're still in the yard, so if there's a little bit of background noise, I apologise. So breeding goals and breeding decisions. So all of our replacements are born in the autumn. So our autumn block is mated to predominantly dairy semen with some beef, and that's where we're trying to get our replacements. Is that going to be too noisy? I'll give it a sec.
Might be a bit. It's a Kubota steaming into the yard for our listeners who can't see the flaming orange in the sunlight.
So our replacements basically are all coming from the autumn herd.
What was the thinking behind that decision?
Good question. So I didn't want to have four groups of young stock. So two groups of in-calf heifers and two groups of calves or woolling heifers. That felt like it would be quite complicated. Main goal was that I was happy to be split calving and have the compromise that comes with the inefficiency, I guess, or the complication that comes with calving cows twice a year.
It's okay, it's a tractor, it's a farm, it's fine.
The main goal was basically about having one group of young stock, female young stock dairy heifers born each year. I didn't want us to end up with this situation where we had four groups of young stock, you know, two sets of bulling heifers and two sets of in-calf heifers. That felt like it would be complicated. So the compromise really as we went split calving was that we only wanted to have heifer calves born once a year. The goal was always going to be that the autumn block would be the bigger of the two. We needed that bigger autumn block to drop our grazing demand in the summer. So by drying those cows off, we can drop our demand. So we needed that bigger block in the autumn. And it made most sense to pull our female replacements out of the bigger group of cattle, because that gave us a bigger pool of genetics to select from.
Yep.
So the goal was that the heifers would come from the bigger group, and the plan was that the bigger group would be the autumns. So that was that kind of decision. And then the other bit, there was an additional bolt onto that really, I suppose, was the spring block was, as it was always going to be beef, was going to be made out of dropouts of the autumn block. So heifers are going to join the autumn herd, or do join the autumn herd. We serve for 6 weeks in the autumn, and the 20% that don't get in calf in the first 6 weeks can roll to the spring block. And that roll, I think, from an autumn block calving cow to a spring block calving cow is just a cheaper way of rolling cows. You know, rolling cows is not necessarily best business practice, but if you're going to roll cows, it's a cheaper roll to go from the autumn to the spring. So that's why the heifers come from the autumn. In terms of then what we're trying to select for when we're breeding replacements. So we have the 10 years that we spent as a very strict spring block calving herd has given us a herd that is high in milk solids, so 9% milk solids is what we'd average over a year, and is highly fertile. So we're consistently getting 80% six-week and calf rate. So we have those kind of two amazing genetic characteristics that come out of selection pressure for block calving herds and the use of New Zealand genetics. So we've got fertility and we've got percentages of milk solids. As a result, when we're selecting now, we're selecting for kilos of milk solids. So not necessarily just the percentages, but we're selecting for total kilos of milk solids. We're selecting for calving ease if it's for heifers. We are selecting for capacity, so chest width, chest depth. We're selecting heavily for capacity. If we look at a New Zealand proof, the trait other than production that is most strongly correlated to BW, to breeding worth, is capacity. So we're selecting heavily for capacity. And then the other really important thing for our herd is we're going to select really very strongly on udders. So, you know, we are not necessarily, well, not that's completely untrue. We're definitely not trying to breed a show cow, but in a herd of cows where we're trying to do reasonable milk solids, udder support and udder attachment is really important. So I guess if we're looking at a bullproof, cannot compromise on udders. We want good chest width and capacity, and then we want our bull team to average 9% milk solids. I don't mind if some bulls are a bit less, but if we're going to use bulls that are going to average 8%, we need to make sure there are bulls in our team that are going to average 10% milk solids, because I don't want to lose milk solids from percentages of milk solids from the herd. And then, yeah, we want big positives in kilos of milk solids.
And does that link back to your contract then? So is that what your contract's paying for? And with the split, are you getting seasonality and things? So are those drivers when in the back of your mind when you're making decisions?
Yeah, so we're on an Arla milk contract, which for a long time has been a really good thing. Today it's maybe not a great thing, but we are on an Arla milk contract and we're fortunate about that. Yeah, so we're on an Arla milk contract, which is a fantastic asset really that this farm has. And they are paying us for kilos of fat and kilos of protein. So milk solids is what we need. We're not really interested in litres. And actually, I think as well, probably there's an argument. We're not going to move beyond milking cows twice a day. We're never going to be a three times a day herd. I think to kind of limit pressure on udders and encourage longevity in the herd, it's actually milk quality. We want percentages rather than more volume. We're not looking to put large volumes through these cows' udders. We want just high milk quality through the udders to kind of promote that longevity.
Okay, fantastic. And so industry stats show that over 75% of dairy inseminations use sex semen. How much, if any, sex semen are you using?
We would be on par with the industry average, isn't that good news? So about three quarters is sexed. So we would use a small amount of conventional Frisian, and then we would use sexed dairy predominantly for it is about three quarters of inseminations.
Okay, well, fantastic. So like bang on target then.
Exactly.
Nothing to aim for there.
Exactly.
Tick the box.
We might go further. We might go further with sex semen. Probably I didn't really imagine we'd get to the stage where it'd be 75%. I think, you know, 2 years ago, we were kind of dipping our toe in the water, we're using 25% say sex semen. Well, 2 years later we're at 75%. That's been a remarkably quick change, and we've probably followed the trend in the industry with that. It's an important point, this, in general. We are not being pioneers, we are just following the trends.
But the results here build your confidence to use it even more.
Absolutely, most of the time. We will occasionally have a sex bull that underperforms. And, you know, when you're then looking at a conception rate that's in the high 30s, when you're used to conception rates for sex semen, they're in the 60s and conventional in the 70s, that probably knocks your confidence, but maybe that's just more of a lesson in using a wider bull team.
Yep.
So that we can kind of mitigate for the fact that some bulls won't sex as well. That's probably the answer, rather than losing faith in sex semen.
Yeah, and so we've touched on some of the indexes that you use. So you're looking at BW, you've been looking at EBI. So AHDB have the herd genetic report. They obviously cover PLI and SCI and ACI. So now that you've got two blocks, you know, they're quite established now, there's no rolling anymore. would it be worth looking at a block index that really does lean into fats, proteins, and a focus on fertility?
That's a very well-crafted question. The answer is obviously yes.
Back you into a corner.
Yeah. So probably PLI isn't really relevant to the system that we're trying to do. There's always going to be a need and a desire, really, to outwinter some spring calving cows. And I think that kind of management probably isn't really in line with what the PLI is selecting for. We'd be a bit different to that. So probably PLI won't have a space in this business. And I guess as we're actually effectively an autumn calving herd with a small spring block that's all served to beef, probably SCI isn't really necessarily the right measure for our business. That said, you know, I'm very happily selecting bulls from proofs that are currently marketed at spring calving genetics, you know, New Zealand and Irish bulls. So the one that is inevitably going to be of the most interest to us is going to be the ACI. Ironically, it's probably the one that today I know the least about, but that's on me to accelerate that knowledge to catch up and find out what it is that might be relevant to us. And actually often, I can think of lots of instances in discussion groups where with fellow farmers we've talked about the kind of desire to have a ranking system on which we could easily rank our cows. We would say it's so unfair, in New Zealand they can use BW and Minder and herd management software to mean that they can really effectively rank their cows from best to worst. Isn't it unfortunate that we can't or haven't been able to do that successfully? Actually, probably things like the ACI are providing us a means to do that, and the onus is on us, isn't it, to try and figure out how I can make better use of that tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there are the UK conversions of those metrics that take into consideration, you know, UK markets, so feed costs, contracts, heifer replacement rates and things like that, that just give a hopefully a truer picture of how it would translate into your system.
Yeah.
So that's something to consider.
Probably as well a big thing for the ACI for us, and how it could fit into our system would be in just enabling us to fairly easily compare bulls from different companies on a standardised proof. And while I guess currently when we're picking bulls, we're not looking to pick bulls that are topping certain indexes. We're not picking the highest BW or the highest EBI or highest ACI bulls. We're looking at sub-traits within those matrixes, and we're selecting not for, you know, highest BW, but we're looking at kilos of milk solids and things that can contribute towards those headline figures, rather than probably selecting on headline figures themselves. But that's just but that's also kind of quite basic, isn't it? It's thinking, well, where is our herd weak and where is it strong, and kind of what traits can we pull in, and yeah, having something that enables comparison across different indices is a fantastic tool.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at your herd genetic report, you are strong in the things that matter for your contract. So the fats and the proteins are really high. You've got really good longevity in your herd. You've got cows making it all the way into like sort of fourth, fifth, sixth lactation. So clearly you're doing something right already. So it's maybe fine-tuning that with an index that could pinpoint that for you. I mean, ACI is kind of that middle ground between PLI and a block index, because it does factor quite heavily into production. So I know that has been a focus since the start when you started. You know, if production's low, you've got to build that so that it gives you the wiggle room to make some decisions within the herd. So
absolutely. Very succinctly said. We are strong on fertility and milk solids, definitely. We would happily accept more kilos of milk solids if it's not going to compromise those
Absolutely.
Two things. So yeah, well summarised, yeah, totally, that's what we're after.
So the process of improvement is continual. How often are you tweaking your breeding protocol?
Good question. So when by breeding protocol, I suppose that's about the sires, is it, rather than the mechanics of how we breed the cows?
Well, has that changed at all? You know, do you before you get to a breeding season, are you checking cows? Is there what's your sort of
good question?
Yeah, what's the lead up to breeding looking like?
Fair. Okay, so So the heifers probably we are fairly settled into a program, so we would just use a seeder program. There is benefit to that in driving genetic gain. Like our heifers should be, if we're making any good breeding decisions, then our heifers should be our best genetics. So there is a benefit in a seeder program in that it enables us to target our replacements to come from our best genetics. And also that seeder program provides so much simplicity. A fixed time AI, there is nothing more simple than that in terms of their labor efficiency and minimizing handling the animals. So in terms of breeding protocols, the heifers definitely were settled on a fixed time AI. With the cows, the current protocol is relatively settled, but actually that is an area we may change in the future. There's quite a lot of technology now that helps promote good heat detection. I think we've got a lot of management capability within the team to pick up cows that are on heat. So probably haven't really seen a use or a need for that technology today. And I think the team gets quite a lot of enjoyment out of spending time finding the cows that are on heat. But that might change in the future. Pre-mating, we do some tail painting. We probably don't do much with that information, but maybe it just gives everyone 4 weeks warning that we're about to start serving.
At least it looks nice.
Yeah, and actually it's quite satisfying, I suppose, pre-mating, seeing the cows going from, you know, a certain colour to then being able to see the proportion of cows that are on heat. We don't do loads pre-mating. I think we can put quite a lot of money into vet time to target a fairly small amount of animals when you start getting really carried away with cows that aren't cycling pre-breeding. So we don't do too much there. In terms of how is our bull selection changing and our kind of protocols around breeding, so over a slightly longer time scale than maybe just I've been here, if we think sort of over a 10-year time scale, so there was obviously a massive emphasis on fertility and milk solids when we were a fully spring calving herd. A couple of things have changed maybe then since then. Probably the big one is about Arla, and there every calf has a value policy. We as dairy farmers used to be able to say, well, we're dairy farmers, not beef farmers, you know, we don't have to get carried away with that. Quite rightly, Arla have completely meant that we now can't say that. So we have to take that more seriously, and that has absolutely changed our cow type, and that's been a fundamental change in our breeding policy. Well, that's driven a fundamental change, I should say, in our breeding policy. So we're now very conscious of not selecting bulls that are under 500 kilos of live weight. We want a minimum 500 kilo live weight cow, probably more like a 550 kilo average in the herd. That's been a big change. But it was a reaction to a direction the industry is going, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think that a 550 kilo cow doing 550 kilos of milk solids, or even a 600 cow doing 600 kilos of milk solids, is any less efficient in our system than a 500 kilo cow doing 500 kilos of milk solids. So I don't think there's any downside to us of having a slightly bigger animal as long as her production goes up with that. We just need to make sure she is still good at walking. She is still very fertile, and she can still outwinter if she ends up as a spring cow. So that's going to put a ceiling on how big our cows will get. But yeah, kind of that Arla every calf has driven a big change probably in our breeding policy.
Okay. And so for our listeners, looking at your herd now, there's quite a mix, but they've kind of evened out. What are they, sort of a 550 kilo cow?
Yeah. So we're at 560 kilos of milk solids. I'd be probably kidding myself if I thought we were doing that with a 500 kilo cow. Like we've got it, you know. Yeah, we're not that good. So we've probably... Yeah, we're working on it. So we're probably a 550 kilo cow average. Probably our heifers are a little bit more black and white than our older cows. The young stock that we have coming through the system now are either black and white or black. We don't really have any red genetics or anything, that jersey coming into the herd. And in terms of our bull selection, you know, our team of bulls that we use today is 75% pure Friesian. Yeah, virtually pure Friesian. And then we normally use one crossbred bull that is sort of 20-25% of the herd, and he would be no more than 50% Jersey. So if we look at our genetics that are going into the herd, well, on average, at most, it's 1/8 Jersey. So the herd is getting more black and white, but there are black and white bulls that can do 9% milk solids. So that's, you know, that's what we want. Why do we, the Irish system or the Irish UBI would challenge and say, well, hang on, why do you need a crossbred if you've got a Friesian that can do 9% milk solids? Because that is the animal that we're trying to breed. So actually that probably ticks a box as well.
Okay, so all your young stock, that's kind of the dream herd at the minute. That sort of black and white as opposed to a bit of a hodgepodge of the older cows.
Yeah, we want black and white. We don't really want red cows. They are fantastic, perfectly good animals, but they just provide us with a challenge when they have a beef calf. There's no more or less science to it than that. It's very simple, really.
And I don't know whether it will have been cut out or not, but a tractor drove through the yard when I asked about. So do you sit down and make a breeding plan with the team beforehand? Who is involved in that process? What happens? Like, is it on the day you just look at a cow and you think, right, I know what I've got in my flask? Or is there sort of a bit of a rough draft before that? Or is it really rigid?
In terms of picking our bull team, inevitably I end up doing that. I really enjoy pedigrees and breeding animals. I absolutely love that. And that would be one of my strongest areas of interest in dairy farming. It's a travesty that we're not a pedigree herd of Holstein, so I would love that side of it, but only that side of it. So I really love pedigrees. It just turns out we haven't got pedigree cows. So I spend a lot of boring evenings trawling through bull proofs, selecting bulls that I think match our system. And you can, if you really get into it, you can download all the data sets from New Zealand of all the bulls that are available and start ranking them based on what you want. So actually the BW thing kind of drifts away. You can select for the subcomponents. So I spend a lot of time and I get a lot of pleasure out of doing that. And we normally buy our dairy semen a very long way in advance, so that if there are certain bulls in New Zealand that we want and they may be able to be available for export, we can start asking questions a long way out to express our interests in them. So for our serving this autumn, so for November serving this autumn, we had ordered most of the semen for that in about January this year, like crazy far in advance. But the bulls are kind of first come, first serve, right? And if I want to assemble, well, I just need to look and decide early on. So I probably end up looking and picking the bull teams. And then in terms of breeding on the day, it's not very complicated. So I suppose if a cow is remotely crossbred, well, we're definitely going to mate her to a Friesian. Maybe there's a bit more complication. Assuming a cow is in the better half of our herd and we want to breed a replacement off her, well, if she's crossbred, she's only going to get, and we want to mate her to dairy, she's only going to get a Friesian. And it'll only be if she's one of our more or most extreme Friesian type cows that we would then look at putting some crossbred genetics into her. I suppose our breeding rotation, although we haven't yet gone full circle because I've only been here for about 4 years, will be one or two, maybe three generations of Friesian and then back to crossbred. So an animal that is crossbred is only ever going to get Friesian, so that's actually quite an easy decision. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You said about if she's a good cow, how do you know that?
Yeah, good question. Finger in the air and guess.
Or HDB
Herd Genetic Report. Sorry, we should reshoot that. That was the correct answer.
Exactly.
So how do we know the good cows? So we're going to hope our heifers are our good cows, and our heifers, we're ranking them based on their dam's kilos of milk solids. Okay, so kilos of milk solids the dam has done, and then we can pick our heifers who have dams that have done over 600 kilos of milk solids, and we can target using dairy semen on them. In the herd itself, we are then again ranking on kilos of milk solids. So we milk record 12 times a year. So we've got the data, and the only time we ever make use of that data is when we're breeding. So we're spending 12 grand a year on milk recording. Crikey, we should use that information to make some decisions, right?
Yep.
We're using total kilos of milk solids that the dam is doing, and then we're adding a few basic stuff around kind of udder and health problems. So if there's any Yonis cows, then they would all get beef or get rotated to the spring block. And cows that have got poor udders, we're not mating to dairy. In our herd, most cows end up being eligible for sex semen. The only cows that wouldn't be eligible are cows that have calved too late. But because we're calving for 6 weeks, you know, the very last cow to calve, basically, as long as she's on time, should have 6 weeks to recover and start cycling again. So most cows would be eligible for sex semen when we're serving.
Okay. My only challenge would be that looking at kilos of milk solids from the milk recording data, is it a good enough metric? Because it's just coming from that one data set. Do you need some more genetic data to back those decisions, do you reckon? And to look at like something like the AHDV herd genetic report, that could give you some more factors, because you can tweak it and look at some more or less desirable traits similar to what you're doing already with bulls, but it just gives you a bit more in depth about the cows.
I think I've been backed into that corner again. I can't possibly disagree. We've only just started to hit the steady state in our business, I guess. It wasn't very long ago that we had nowhere near enough cows in the autumn, and there wasn't really much ability to put a lot of selection pressure on what we wanted to breed replacements from.
Right.
And it's only really this year that we've got a decent number of bulling heifers that are all autumn born that we can start really picking through who the good ones are. So I guess it's all been a bit of a this is just all an elaborate excuse. But it has all been a compromise just while we've been changing that calving pattern and I've been trying to learn about this farm. So there have been compromises.
Yeah.
And our milk recording data, I'm not going to defend it too hard because I know we are not perfect. But it's relatively comprehensive. You know, 12 recordings a year, that's quite a lot of data. And you can pick up the anomalies and rule them out. So are we perfect? No, crikey, we're a long way off. But I'd like to think we're kind of trying.
Doing a lot of things right.
Yeah.
Definitely,
yeah.
Definitely. So what does your herd or cow type look like in 10 years' time? And with the insight of genetic report, the data that you collect, your milk recording data, all of it collated, what is your breeding policy going to focus on going forward?
Good question. 10 years is quite a long time.
I know. But I think if we're already looking at heifers now, well, it's going to be a couple of years before they enter the system. It is quite a, quite a long time, isn't it?
So today, we're probably only using about 25% genomic bulls, which maybe we're a bit behind the curve in that one. In 10 years' time, I'd be fairly confident that all of our herd will be bred to genomic size. And actually, in 10 years' time, I think we'll have genomic tests for all of our herd. We would do that tomorrow in a heartbeat. We just keep getting told that we can't do a crossbred cow. So 10 years' time, I'm sure we'll be genomically testing the cows. So I'm sure we'll know genetically who our elite cows are. And I'm sure we'll be using genomic bulls. It's amazing in breeding, and a sex semen has been a good example. The industry has changed really quickly. I can remember probably 6 years ago, sat in a room of farmers, and the farmer, a really great farmer in the background, saying, come on, when are we going to get sex semen? I want to breed animal. I want to breed heifers off my top cows. And the answers being, oh, sex semen, that's a bit alien as a technology. We're not sure how that works. Well, crikey. 75%, as you'd said earlier, in the industry is doing that now. So look how quickly it changes. So I might not be being ambitious enough in my thinking to only say, we're going to use genomic bulls and we're going to genomically test our cows. People are doing that already. We might be flushing our top cows. That might become a reliable and accurate technology that's at a cost level that makes it sensible. We could easily end up doing that. Maybe we'll be doing embryo transfers. I have no idea. But I think in terms of 10 years' time, what will our herd look like? Well, we set off wanting to do 550 kilos of milk solids. We've gone through that. We'll be 600 plus. I'm absolutely confident we'll be over 600 kilos of milk solids in 5 years' time. We haven't made good breeding decisions if we're not. So we absolutely will be above that. I think we'll be a herd of cows that is predominantly black and white. I think we'll be a herd of cows that probably weighs 550, 575 kilos. I hope they're highly fertile, I hope they have good udders, I hope we're doing 9% plus milk solids. I think that's the kind of cow we'll have.
What's gone well and what would you do differently here?
And that's kind of big picture, not...
I think so. It's quite nice to tie it all in, isn't it, rather than pat yourself on the back and make some great breeding decisions.
We've made some bad ones and I can show you them. What's gone well? Completely out of my control, but we have had an amazing team of people working here for the past 4 years, some of whom were here before I came and some of whom have come since. That's probably been one of our biggest successes. We've had some quite drawn out construction projects, which have been a bit of a challenge. We've had some tricky years of grass growth. Last year still scars me greatly, but we have also had some really good ones. 2022 was not, but yeah, we've had some good ones either side of that. Something that hasn't gone well but was inevitable, we have really proven the cost that is associated with changing calving patterns. We've really proven how expensive it is when you don't make good forage. Really basic things. If you don't make good forage and you don't calve your cows frequently, then that's not the dream. We've been very lucky the last 4 years. That's been a remarkably good time to be a dairy farmer. Probably this year is the trickiest. We're still seeing high costs. We have seen some imperfect weather in the spring, and we're looking at a relatively low milk price. But in general, probably, we've been very lucky in the timing of what we've been doing.
Yeah, it's just a case of going forward, nail the basics, and just kind of wait it out, hopefully.
100%, right? This is the brilliant thing about dairy farming. We are not building rockets. We are getting milk out of a cow. It is very basic, and there are lots of people who have done it very well for me, who I can just look to copy and replicate. There is nothing pioneering on this farm. If we are doing something pioneering, we have vastly ventured off the brief. We are just trying to go down a very well-trodden path.
So. Just imagine that as your mantra when you get up in the morning. I am not building a rocket. I am milking a cow.
100%. 100%. Yeah, 100%. That's what I really like about dairy farming. We're not trying to be pioneering, so it's really accountable, right? We've got so much good data of what other people have done, and we can really hold ourselves to account on figures that other people have done, and that's really rewarding, right? Well, it can be really unrewarding if it's not good, but it can be very rewarding if you are going well too.
So, absolutely.
Yeah, that's why I like this.
Fantastic.
Should we go see some heifers?
Yeah, definitely.
Because we could find this high ACI animal.
So, George, thank you so much for speaking to me today. It's been great to hear about the decisions behind how you've bred for productivity in your system, and I really look forward to seeing how your herd continues to develop. Using the herd genetic report from AHDB can be a great way for farmers to understand their current herd status, plan for the future, and benchmark against other herds. If you'd like to learn more about unlocking your herd's hidden potential using the herd genetic report, check out the AHDB website where you can sign up if you're a regular milk recorder. We're also launching a series of workshops this autumn to help farmers create tailored breeding plans using the herd genetic report, which you can find more information about on the website or speak to your local knowledge exchange manager.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.